You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Making Waves, the Shiprock Podcast. We are episode 70, and do not adjust your ears. It is Al McManus here. I'm substituting for the young, the spry, the talented, the long-locked lover of Justin Press, who couldn't make it here tonight. I think he had some more important things to do, but his legacy will live on long past this episode, and he'll be back next week. Our guest tonight is a five-time Grammy Award nominee, three-time Country Music Association Singer of the Year, finalist for BET's Historian of the Decade 2001. He's a proud owner of many t-shirts and pants and two-time survivor of shaking baby syndrome. He and his co-host Dave Stone have released a shocking number of episodes, the Boogeyman Podcast, and a podcast not unlike this one where three gentlemen chat about things that just happen in their daily life and generally, genuinely comedic results. His greatest personal achievement will happen in January of 2022 when he joins a boatload of hard rock and music metalheads on the Carnival Breeze cruise ship for Shiprocked, a music charter vacation brought to you by yours truly and our staff of great people at Ask For Entertainment, on which ship he will shatter the rib cages of the sailing guests with two sets of hysterical laughter, I'm sure, custom crafted for metalheads. Lady and gentleman, please welcome star of film, voice, television, stage, and podcast, Mr. Kyle Kinane.
Wow. Yes. That was a hell of an intro.
Yeah, I really did it.
He called me earlier and he's like, can I read this to you? And I said, yeah, what is it? And he's like, just shut up. And then I listened to it and I said, I didn't hear you. You kind of cut out halfway through and then you read it again. So it was actually my second and a half time reading it, hearing it.
It's really great. Half times. It's great. And it's the Boogie Monster podcast, but that detail shouldn't be,
you know what?
Shouldn't upset anybody here.
No, the Boogie Monster. It's the Boogie Monster because the Boogie Monster, God, typos.
I was like, hey, he's on a roll. I'm gonna let him go with it.
Yeah, the great thing is right now is I can just say the Boogie Monster podcast, and then I can just fly that right in later.
Oh, you sound people know how to really finagle.
Geeking out, cheat, man.
This is where fake news comes from. That's right. Yeah. So it was all the audio engineers.
That's true.
That started it.
And speaking of audio engineers, that's a great place to start because I noticed on your podcast that there's like a super heavy metal thing that happens at the beginning of that thing, man, like a super low chug kind of thing.
My co-host Dave is the one who, like, he worked in radio, so he had edited stuff together. I'm not quite sure. I think we got a few intros that go into it, but he got me into like bands like Clutch and was like Bongzilla. It's like the real heavy stoner stuff, which is I do like, but then there's moments where you're like, oh, this just feels like an intestinal disease. It feels like the soundtrack to like a bowel issue.
Right. IBS. Clutch.
Somebody got the 7-string bass and they're using all of them. Okay. All right.
Yeah. The Clutch tour sponsored by Imodium.
That's actually where the name of the Boogie Monster came from, as we were at a Clutch show. I was like, I like this guy because he's kind of fun, but he just makes Boogie Monster noises in between lyrics because he's and I'm doing a crazy thing. That's how we came up with the name of the podcast.
They're so great. That's a great live band, aren't they? That's amazing.
It was. Yeah, just every song has a breakdown where he's like, haunted house noises. I'm like, this guy's hilarious.
I wonder if that's how Matt Pike got his name for the band Sleep. Just like, what does this sound like to you? And he looks around the room and everybody else is just sleeping. Because that's exactly how I feel after too much of that shit myself. Is like, man, this is a little bit kind of, I'm going to go to bed now.
Everything has its time and place. There was a moment where we were camping. Dave and I were actually camping on Joshua Tree. And the people we were camping with left already. My van was stuck. So I was sitting there just digging. Like, I'm digging a hole in the desert and with the sun high in the sky, which is already a morose feeling. It's already just vulture bait. And Dave was just making ribs on a grill by himself on the other end of the campsite. And it wasn't even like a campground, just, you know, open use land in the desert. And he was just listening to Sleep with just smoke coming up from the hot desert with ribs out on it. And I'm digging a hole. I'm like, can we change the soundtrack right now? Because this is the song that plays when you die like this.
Right. You're going to shove me into this hole that I'm digging.
Yeah. How about a little ska music to lighten the mood, man? I need some horns and something silly going on.
Yacht rock, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Give me some Hall & Oates. Yeah. Can we please the tension here?
Can we please get caught between the moon and New York City?
I need something
right now.
I'd like to waste away in Margaritaville for a moment, if you don't mind.
So many questions. So speaking of the music, it's refreshing for us. Chad and I talked a little earlier doing a little prep for this, and it's like, it's super refreshing, certainly for Chad having hosted all these episodes and for me kind of being in the background and editing and all that stuff. But there's a lot of similarities, I feel like, from a Road Dogg standpoint, right? I mean, between traveling musicians, I mean, traveling is traveling and performing in front of people and expectations of yourself and crowds and night to night. I mean, sometimes you feel like you're part of that musical traveling community.
Yeah, I think realizing that bands take nights off, like, you know, as a fan and a consumer for so long. Because I mean, I'm from, like, I came up through like the all ages punk scene in Chicago and see, like, and that was a little, you know, obviously a lot lower stakes than these big stadium tours that bands do, but that. You think every night is backstage and it's just that footage of, you know, people just throwing Jack Daniels bottles and naked. And then there's nights where it's like, no, I think we're going to get some sleep tonight. We got a veggie platter backstage, you know, just like realizing that is acceptable. Like, you can't do that shit every night. Well, maybe not anymore. I'm 45. So maybe that's why it's age speaking like that.
Right.
But
sure.
Dude, I think about having to split my pay with like five other guys. Fuck that, man. That's way better being a stand-up.
Yeah.
I got no gear. I just show up. I don't have to pay out a roadie. Oh man, you guys got a raw deal being in rock bands.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, all the ladies and fame or whatever,
but you know,
those cabs. No, thank you.
But you know, wait for somebody to load out the drums to get back to the hotel.
You know, Chad, you can speak to that though. I mean, what about the mod? Because you toured heavily for up until a couple years ago. You toured heavily for a decade. What is that? To me, it doesn't seem like there was much of the super party lifestyle. A lot of the bands that I see now, there's a lot of Xbox, there's a lot of social media, there's a lot of, you know, cell phone stuff. Mm-hmm. It was, Chad, did you experience that in the last 10 years? Other than the obvious bands that are out there just going haywire and that's what they do. Yeah. But I think there has been a paradigm shift, has there not, in rock and roll touring as far as bands that are really beating it down?
Yeah. I mean, the reality of it, Kyle, you mentioned the hall scene. That's how I grew up too. I used to rent the VFW halls in my small town and bring all the speakers, right? You know, and we'd charge $3, $5, much like, you know, we find places like Fireside Bowl. You're from Chicago area, right?
Okay. Yeah. Now we're talking. Sure.
So we're thinking like, but what's that like? What's the after show? No, after show is a bunch of nerds hanging out at Denny's or whatever version of the 24-hour diner, smashing coffee and, you know, then they got to take their shit back to a practice space because they have responsible for all the gear there. Now, you can take and compartmentalize that over the 20 years of what it was to tour. Once you hit a tour bus, which Wilson as a band did like a half of a tour once in the bus. Other than that, you're responsible for your own lives and livelihoods to get to and fro. So you can party when you know that, like, it's not your drive or, you know, that night or you have the night off. And I mean, Kyle, you probably have tons of stories of being in these clubs over the years where after your late show on a Friday or a Saturday, the last thing you want to fucking do is stay up out in that hallway selling merch and then go into a bar with somebody, you know?
Yeah.
You're just tired. Yeah, I would assume.
Yeah, I think, I don't want to like, boy, let's get ready for Shiprock and talk about how nobody parties anymore. Mm-hmm. I notice with like younger people too, I think they've seen enough examples of people who just drink and go to excess, and with social media, how much that's been shared, and it's really not glamorous. It's just like, hey man, you're like, in your mid 40s and you're still like, doing shots. Like, that kind of looks sad, buddy. I mean, don't catch me in the red corner on this boat ride, and we'll be having a good time. But I think that like yeah, I don't. Nothing after midnight is going to surprise me anymore. Like right. I've done it, I've seen it. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for how few scars I've gotten through those nights. But you're not going to be like, but then we're going to go here and it's going to be wild. I trust that it will be for you.
Yes.
I've been around wild. I've been wild. I made it through. Oof. Yeah. You kids have fun out there.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. You know, craft a fun story about it. That's how I got to where I'm telling crazy stories. Now my stories are like, man, this cat that I'm looking after sure has the shits. And that's fine. That's exciting to me now. It doesn't have to be. Nobody wants to hear a 45-year-old talking about doing like rails of coke and then fighting the sunrise.
Right, except for me and Chad right now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, really? Well, speaking of rails of coke and fighting the sunrise, when you're out there on tour, much like I'm talking about this band and trailer shit, right? You get to see all the wild shit. That's the part that I think, like, yes, we party. Yes, we've done lots of drugs, you know, that sort of thing at the time period. But now it's more or less like I have to get here to there. And this isn't the funnest time of this entire adventure is the driving and doing the whole like stopping at a gas station and trying to figure out what piece of shit you're going to put in your stomach that night. But you have a way worse, I think, if I was to imagine a 2-month long tour that aren't just clubs on Fridays and Saturdays, but doing club rooms. And I booked I booked you in these specific rooms here in Detroit, Michigan a few times now, and I've seen your exit. Could you explain to the other people how what it's like to be a comedian on the road doing a full tour in general?
It's Detroit. That's where I played Crowfoot, I think is when I was playing up there.
That's my room.
I had that hoodie on. I had the staff hoodie they gave me. I got it stunk it up yesterday. It really is, if you want to treat this thing like I feel in a moment of sincerity here, I feel very fortunate that this is the lifestyle I had. I just was talking to somebody today about this, about maybe we don't all get to be superstars. But what if you got to live a middle-class life doing exactly the thing you wanted to? Mm-hmm. What if just, I don't have, you know, I'm not phenomenally rich or phenomenally famous, but all my bills are paid because I tell jokes. Mm-hmm. So now that I've put that in jeopardy for so many years of partying and trying to be the guy, you party and then you tell stories about partying and that attracts other people that want to party with you. And then there's a brief moment where that overlaps. You're the partier and the crowd wants to see the party. And you're like, oh, now I'm fulfilling expectations as opposed to having maybe a good time that I wanted to have. You're like, well, people expect this of me. And then that gets a little scary and it gets a little sad and you get older and you realize, oh, I can't keep being this guy. So I can either fake it, you know, I can either drink a little tumbler glass full of apple juice and pretend it's scotch and just Dean Martin myself. I'm super drunk. No. Or I can try to be true to the thing I'm doing with stand-up, which is talk about my actual life and hope that people realize, like, yeah, he doesn't need to get wasted anymore. He's 45. I still do. Here's peekaboo. Right. I still do.
Yeah.
I just don't think the stories are helping an audience be like, oh, this is a guy who it just sounds sad to me when you see somebody that's old, like, you guys partying last night? No, man, you don't. You're on your third marriage, dude. Don't do these jokes anymore. Change your life. So touring for me is like now is being incredibly grateful that people want to come out and see the shows. And guess what? I do a better show if I'm not drinking or and I'm not hungover. And now I would much rather go, you know, I don't have massive crowds, but I need to make sure that they want to come back the next time I come through that city. Mm-hmm. Right. And the only way I can do that is by making sure that the show that they saw last year is topped by the next show. And the only way I can do that is by maintaining my well-being mentally and physically. And that means a little less partying. I still have my drinks. Drugs, I don't really need that life. I mean, mushrooms, sure, dude. They're just good for humanity. Whole other conversation. That's how touring is. It's like, man, I make enough money to stay at Hampton Inns now instead of the cheapest option. That's luxury to me. The illusion of cleanliness. The it's Hambone true, Inns, man, that's it. Like, look at it. This place seems unfucked in here.
Right.
I know right. it's not, but at least it appears as much.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas you get some like $60 Best Western room, and like the you could tell the staff, like the must of the front desk staff. Oh. Just finger banging each other.
Yeah, it's so bad. My wife and I stopped at a place on one of our travels a couple of years ago. It was just last minute, like needed something, right? We had a fucking dog with us. Like, why are we traveling with a dog? And there was a list in the room of the amount, the value amount, the dollar value of all the things in the room. Like, if you steal the telephone, it's going to cost you $35. I'm like, this isn't good. If you steal a pillow, like everything in the room was itemized with a dollar amount with it. I'm like, this is the worst.
Which is an extension of the fancy hotels. Like, did you like this bathrobe? Well, it's actually $500 in the gift shop. By the way, do you like this telephone? Yeah. $35 if you walk
out. Steal it.
We're trying to remodel this place. We're trying to get
help us remodel
insurance fraud right now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So then I wanted to ask you something very specific, or maybe chime in on something very specific. As a musician, I always thought this, it didn't really hit me, I guess, until like 2 years ago. And I can't remember why or where I was, but I was like, oh, fuck, that didn't make any sense until I just heard somebody else say it to me. I made a record that nobody knew what it was going to be sounding like and how I put it together. All this is very, you know, lock and key for the most part until that record comes out and then the fans hear it. And then you say, sweet, now I'm going to go play those songs every single night for sometimes upwards 3 to 4 years, depending on how successful the record is. You, as a comedian, do a complete opposite, I feel like, version of that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not out there in the clubs doing the shit that they just watched on Netflix on your special. You're out there figuring out what's going to work for that special, right? And then you put that special out, and then you don't even fucking think about those welly manicured timed bits that you spent years eating the shit, getting drunk to think of. And how does that work for you? Like, can you give us like your process in general?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, comedy relies on the element of surprise, and I think like a lot of music relies on the element of familiarity, where like you have to get somebody, like give the new stuff a chance and you'll find that you want to re-listen to this. So I think it's a struggle in both areas. But with stand-up, it's like, right now I have an hour and change of stuff that I'm like, I want to record this because I can only say this stuff so many times before. I've used the analogy before. It's like a skateboard deck that loses its snap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A new deck, you're going to ollie, it's going to respond great, but then you have that, it just doesn't have, you can still do the same stuff on it, but it's just, or whatever metaphor you want to throw in there, guitar strings that you can still play the song, but you know, it's losing a little luster if you don't change it for a while.
Right,
I got to, for myself, I'm like, I need to record this and get to something new. And it's not a very safe way to do it. You know, idealistically, I'd have 2 hours ready to go. I'd record one. So as soon as that comes out, which now there's no process anymore. You just record it and put it on YouTube for free because, nobody else cares. You know, my stuff, I got embroiled with that whole Spotify thing. Oh, darn, I'm losing $37 a month because my 5 hours of material or my five hours of stand-up isn't on Spotify, but more that hits more because a track could come up in someone else's playlist and somebody could be like, oh, who's that? I want to look at more of their stuff. That's what they've taken away from me there.
Right.
So that's why you just go to YouTube, put it out. Yeah. Then after once that's out, I don't like the idea of telling jokes I know people heard before. I mean, I'm sure you've been in a conversation, you got your fun stories that you're going to tell, and you start telling when you realize somebody's there that heard that story before. And then just the entire idea that like, oh, here's an anecdote I'd like to chime in on. And that you could tell they know the punchlines you're going to hit. They know it's like, even though the other 9 people there didn't hear the story, I'm worried about the one guy that did.
Right.
So that's why if I do stand up and I put an album out, even if it's like only been out a week, if I know I did that joke the last year I was there, and I'm doing those jokes again, why would those people, again, like I said, why would those people come back and see me? They just paid money to see the same jokes again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, makes total sense.
And once you once you put it on recording, whether it's YouTube or audio or video or both, is there a sense of like, now I can leave that? Now that is really gone. And A, you feel good about that. It's being gone, and you know that you've kind of been unburdened from it. But then is it hard to get the creative spark again, or is it always just kind of stuff feeding behind it? Right. Are you constantly writing, or are there ups and downs? How does it work?
Yeah. I mean, it just turns into a muscle that, you know, you kind of, or a filter that you process everything with. I mean, I've been at it for 22 years at this point. And so it does become this filter that everything you do kind of goes through. Like, my natural response is to make a joke about something, or to respond with seeing not the first obvious thing that's funny about it, but the fourth obvious thing.
Right.
I guess that's not what obvious is if it's the fourth thing.
Right.
Don't worry.
It's the opposite. Right. We're walking through that. Yeah.
So you know, that deeply buried obvious answer.
Right. Yeah. The second guess yourself.
That stuff
a few
you really
times.
Gotta dig for that then jumps out right
it's
at
so
you.
It's so obvious. Yeah. It's, but, yeah, it's like it was, I found, where'd you find it? The last place I looked. Oh, yeah. No shit.
Yeah. So, but I just, it's still fun for me. Like it's still, this was gonna be the thing that I was gonna do anyway, whether success came with it. Like, again, I got all comparisons and metaphors, but I figure it's like somebody that plays, it's like a pub, it's a pub sport. It's poker or it's darts. It's the thing that you were going to get out of the house twice a week to meet your buddies with was going to be an open mic show that I would do. Like, well, that's where my buddies go and they drink and they try new jokes out. And if you never get past that point, who cares? That's your night out at the bar that you see your friends. And that's your social night where you also have this hobby you practice. Mm-hmm. But what if you can take it a little further? What if you can become a guy that knows poker well enough that you can get to bigger and bigger games, this and that? So it's never going to be finished. There's no, like, the idea of recording something and getting rid of it is like, oh, great. Now I got the challenge of coming up with a brand new hour and right. I got to top that last one. And it's frustrating. But if it was only frustrating, I wouldn't do it. I'm incredibly lazy.
Right.
That's why I never made it in a band. I'm like, oh, we all got to get on the same page and then load gear.
Yeah, that's.
I like practice. I like going to practicing because practice is like, I was in a band with my friends and we just like drank beer and shot the shit. It was fun. Every time we had a gig, we're like, this sucks.
Yeah, we got to get real. It's got to get serious now.
Yeah, people are going to realize we're not a good band if we play in front of people. In here, we're the best band we've ever heard.
Yeah, we may as well quit.
Our girlfriend's gonna be like, oh, that's what you've been doing on Thursday nights.
I think it's sucked. The acoustics in that venue.
Yeah, the venue.
We sounded like shit.
It was the PA sucked.
Stripped up over that once booking monitor.
Yeah, we couldn't start the same song over 9 times because we were too drunk. We sounded pretty terrible.
Here's your Wikipedia question. What was the absolute spark, the moment where you're like, I gotta do this, or, you know, there's nothing else I'm going to do? What was that? When did you hit that spark? What happened?
Oh, like immediately when I first tried it was just, especially in Chicago, where like I said, I came from music, and so this is like mid to late 90s, I've seen all the music. And those were always the coolest guys. And they were already funny. Like, the best thing about Chicago is, like, all these bands, like, maybe there was that clique of, like, guys that took themselves really seriously. But all the bands that I saw were already funny. And, like, oh, they're already doing this. Well, like, I started stand-up. And people were like, well, just tell the jokes between songs. Somebody else does. Oh, you're going to just stand up there by yourself and tell jokes?
Well, I can't sing. I can't sing.
I can't do anything musically. You've seen. But right away when I saw that, because I didn't know what I was going to get into, you think like comedy was like always, especially late 90s, it wasn't quote unquote cool or like a thing that it is now, where kind of everybody dabbles in it somehow if they're showbiz adjacent, I think. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was like, oh, like blazer sleeves rolled up, like, oh, my wife's nuts, my kids. I'm like, I don't have either of those. I don't relate to any of this. But for some reason, Mitch Hedberg is still doing it. How did he break through being this long-haired weirdo with one-liners? There's got to be some sort of scene. And I found it. And then I saw all these dudes at an open mic, like all these comics that were not trying nightclub stuff. They were like guys that were kicked out of not kicked out, but like Chicago had like this art scene where it's like musicians that weren't in bands. It was dudes that were like, did the poetry scene, but were also silly and didn't have an outlet within poetry to do that. So they would do these really funny poems and stuff. And then musicians and a bunch of people that like had joined moved to Chicago to be in Second City and found that, or to be like some MLM scheme with their classes. And then, so they were jaded and just went to stand up. Cause it's like, oh, all I have to do is worry about myself. And I kind of was attracted to that scene of loners that were there, and it took place in a bar. So that was already easy to get into. Like, oh, it's in a place that I want to be at anyway. It's in a shitty bar. Well, this is great.
Yeah.
I'm going to get paid in drinks. Even better. It's like I'm making money.
Right.
Right away, I was like, this is what I'm going to do.
Did you have a business sense? Because now it seems like if you're trying to do anything, whether it's comedy or stand up or art or, you know, any kind of performance thing, there's all this really big, there's got to be like this business savvy thing. It's like, you got to get in. And clearly this is before, if you're talking about 25 years or so, is before that was a thing. Right. But what was your business mindset at that point? Were you just like, I'm just going to go do these things. Right. That's why it's funny. You just went and did those things and just did it and did it and did it. And then started to build something in an organic way. Cause now it seems like, well, you got to do this on Twitter. You got to go. There's a funny video you got to do once a week, and then the algorithm this, right? And all this. So that what was your path?
Well, I'll say, and I don't know if it's the same with music, but it's like, you have the two ends of the spectrum. You got people with hustle and people with talent.
Yeah.
And then most everybody is some mixture of those. And the hardest thing to deal with is the people with the more hustle than talent will always be more successful. Because they're going to put it together. Well, I got to have this, this, and this put together. Is it funny? No, but they look good and they got this put together. And this looks slick and isn't it?
Yeah.
And the funniest comedians out there are people that nobody knows about right now. Cause they don't have the other. But I had no business. I had no business sense. I didn't get into stand. You don't get into stand up and give a business sense.
Right.
Or if you do, you're not funny. If you start stand up going, here's my 5-year plan, you're probably a shit comic. Yeah. You don't get stories of like,
yeah.
But even some musicians can still be like, all right, I'm going to play gig. I'm like, I'm a skilled bass player that can be hired out for different types of bands, you know, and can still piecemeal together. Like a comedian, you can be like, I'm a corporate friendly, clean cut comedian. Great for your Christmas party. That's probably not a fun act, but.
Well, as you can tell, Chad, real quick, we have gone live to Facebook. Hello to all of the folks out there in Facebook world, Facebook land. As you can tell, your typical host, Justin Press, is not available tonight. So fortunately for everyone, I'm here in his stead. I'm Al McManus, Chad Nicefield, and we are chatting with Kyle Kinane, who will be joining us on the cruise here in just a couple short weeks, actually. And remember to subscribe to the podcast, like, rate, subscribe, tell your friends. We're making really good waves, no pun, with this podcast. We're in episode 70 now, and things are really picking up for us. And it's a great way for us to communicate and connect with our community of guests and fans, and we love having you here. So thank you. We were just kind of cutting through with Kyle here about kind of the beginning and the end and the middle and some music and some all kinds of interesting things. So remember, on Monday next week, the podcast will drop Monday at 8 a.m. and you can check out the entire thing there. But in the meantime, Chad, what do you have next for our esteemed guest?
So you said you've been doing this for 22 years. I would assume that would mean by proxy 2000 would be around the period of time when you started. Math. Yeah. And then in 2010,
Good math, Chad, way to go.
I got it. Fucking got did it. It took me 30 minutes to get there, but I did it. And then I remembered that your first special came out, 2010, which is Death of the Party.
Yeah.
Okay. Which was audio, not video. But if what I read about, well, I listened to it, but then I read all the stuff on it, and you did it at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Yeah.
And I was going to take this whole entire first part of what we've been talking about doing open mics with your buddies and being like, wow, I'm fucking good at this. I want to do this. And how did you get from there to then doing a special with such a, you know, a prestigious, even still to this day, a group of people in a group of, in a theater setting like that to to put out, you know?
Well, I'll say that we're going back to you ask what kind of business sense I had getting into comedy.
Yeah.
And all I knew is that my life was going to be streamlined down with, I live with a very low overhead at the time, you know, no kids, no marriage. Not that I swore those things off entirely, but I was like, I didn't have any designs on that as a young man. Like, well, I got to make it as a, I kind of felt that as a trapping of the fucking suburbs as I wear the hat.
I didn't see the top part. I just saw the suburbs. Now it's great. Yeah. Before it was
there's
just good.
Hat, yeah. There's this like, you can like do custom sports logos on your hat. So I got on the Chicago Bears colors, but because everybody thinks I'm from Chicago. I never lived in the city. I'm like, what part of Chicago? I'm always like, the part where the tornadoes start. That's the part of Chicago I'm from. And so I really felt like if this maybe put it into some sort of religious sense of being a agnostic atheist, I'm like, oh, this is our one shot to enjoy this. A weird stretch of consciousness is being alive for what is really a grain of rice sized amount of time that, okay, I'm going to go after this very silly dream to make sure there's no human collateral damage around me. I won't get, you know, think I've got to get married like the suburbs. I think get you thinking you've got to, success is judged by this house and the cars and how many kids. And we don't have, not about if you like what you do for a living, but do you have these material things to present to the outside world to say that you're successful? Are you happy? No, never mind that. I'm successful. And I really got scared of that kind of idea. And so I was like, well, I want to go for happiness first and foremost. And not just like, you know, get fucked up and not worried about stuff. I did that for a long time too. But like, have something that keeps you excited. Comedy, like I was saying before, comedy's it's a jigsaw puzzle with no edges. You know, you just keep finding more pieces, and it goes on infinitely as long as you're interested in it. And so I found that thing, and so I'm just going to keep doing stand up for as long as I can mentally handle it, because it's exciting to me. And at this point, I've talked enough where I forgot the original question.
Yeah, and so did we. I don't.
What was your mother's maiden name?
Yeah, mother's maiden name. I don't know how we got here from there, but
I was trying to ask you specifically because with all your credits before that special came out in 2010, your debut hour at Upright Citizens Brigade, you had other work in the voice space and acting space, but largely, I think, you know, if I would have just put what I would say, your rock landing into people's homes, whether those are big homes or small homes, that's the kind of the start of it, if I'm correcting it wrong. So you had to have some sort of like somebody to be like, you should do this. This was going to be, you know, the next move for you. I was just curious what your path was until from 2000 to 2010, you know?
Sure. I moved in 2003. I think I decided like, all right, I've been doing comedy around Chicago enough that I got enough encouragement that you had choices to either go on the road from Chicago and kind of work all these, you know, independent, like the independent comedy scene, I think has come leaps and bounds in the last 20 years, as far as shows that are like, this audience is here to see a good show and not just be drunk on pitchers of like cheap pitchers of beer and yell at whoever they got to, you know, whatever punching bag they hired. But that was the kind of circuit you could run out of Chicago if you wanted to do that. I knew people that right away, as soon as they could work the road from Chicago, would go out and they'd come back with horror stories. Like, what happened? Like, somebody threw a dead fish at me. Like, but I made $75 and now they have to do that because they don't have a day job. I'm like, I'm going to keep a day job until as long as I can, for as long as I can, so as to not ruin comedy with needing it to make money for me. Does that make sense?
What was the day job? What were the day jobs? Boy.
The last one I had, I was closed. The last job I had in LA was I was closed captioning television. I was typing in the captions on the bottom of the screen for the hearing impaired.
Fucking A.
What a weird job. But is that shit live? How does that work? Post.
No, we always got tapes. The people that would do like the live stuff, they were like the top guns.
Yeah.
And they were weird folk. They'd come in They'd come in, they wouldn't like just sunglasses on with a giant
machine,
like the barrel that you get from 7-Eleven, just like the barrel of Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And they would just go into a windowless room and you just see them come out looking bloodshot and frazzled to run to the bathroom and run back in during a commercial break. And they would just, yeah, they were just like, they didn't talk to anybody. They came in, they left. They were like mercenaries.
Truckers. They sound like truckers of the closed
captioned world. But really good listeners.
Bloodshot on the steno machine, just going for it. So anytime people are like, oh, look at this spelling error, I'm like, you type out anything you heard live.
Yeah.
And see how many spelling errors.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's crazy. So in my scramble to catch up here to fill in for our lovely host, I did not the deep dive, but the shallow dive on the YouTube channels. And I love the Hot Ones thing, man. It's one of my favorite things. When I saw you on, I was like, no shit, he was on this. This is amazing.
Oh, thanks.
And you killed it because you didn't die, right, from sweating on camera. Yeah. But I noticed a couple of things you said in there where I felt like there was I can't say a love-hate relationship, but you definitely had a complicated relationship with social media. And I'm wondering the status of that relationship today.
It's a necessary evil. It's removing a lot of comedy. I finally gave up. I've had a TikTok account that my management set up and I finally like, all right, let me try it. Let me go. Like, listen, if the Chinese tech companies want to map my face, they've done it through Zoom over the past year and a half. Mm-hmm. I don't think TikTok is going to give them any information that I've not already signed away on by accepting cookies so I could look at tits on a website somewhere. So it's all out there anyway. Anybody's
right.
I'm open to it, Al. It really is this necessary evil, and I can kick and scream about it, but how much can you complain about something that will only help your career, depending on how you handle it.
Right.
But I just don't like that it feels obligatory.
Right.
Or the fact that everybody.
It's
overwhelming. Almost look how fluttered it is with just people just dancing and this and that. And they have 9 million followers just because of nothing. And you get frustrated as a quote unquote artist going, well, I'm trying to make an actual thing, but because it doesn't fit the format for TikTok or an Instagram video, it's not appreciated as much. And it's like, I can't get mad at that. You know, that's that platform. So either adapt to that platform. I'm sure somebody's pissed that I get people to show up at my stand-up because they hate my fucking stand-up.
Or your face.
Or more so stand-up, you know, it was great because it was the last form for ugly people. And now the attractive people have come in.
Taking all the entertainment dollars and entertainment hours from the actual talent.
Yeah. What are you? You're beautiful. Yeah. What do you have interesting to say?
Yeah. It's pretty fascinating though. Right. That beautiful just kind of rules. And I think at some point that'll probably, maybe it won't change. I don't know. Maybe we're hardwired that way. I don't know.
But they're not as funny as ugly people.
No, they're not. Ugly people are the funniest. That's why Chad just kind of lays there, you know, because look at how handsome he is. Let's be honest, Chad.
You're doing great, Chad.
Oh my God. You guys are now I feel like I'm put on this. Thank you very much. You know, I feel
there
good.
You go. Good save.
It's
thank
a compliment.
You very much.
You're funny.
2022
attractive.
Coming in marginally high. I feel like so
Kyle, since we do have a captive audience of I'm sure ones of dozens at this point,
crushing it,
let's talk for a moment about you and your history with a cruise ship. Have you been on a cruise ship before?
Yeah, twice I was on a cruise ship.
Oh, okay.
I was as a child I was on a Disney cruise, had a great time as a child.
Yes.
And then as an adult I was on there was a much like how Shiprock. Now, will Shiprock have anybody that doesn't know there's a heavy metal concert happening on the cruise?
No, it's a charter. Everybody there is there on purpose.
Okay, because I was on one where it was just a small segment of like one of these large cruise ships that was for a comedy festival. But gotcha. people that were going to the comedy shows knew they were on the cruise for that reason. So right. I did that. I was on that cruise with my good friend Matt Bronger, who I started comedy mm-hmm. with in Chicago years ago. Just talking to him today. And we had a great time just because... Now, as I did that whole spiel about how you don't have to party anymore, we both were like, all right, we're going on this cruise. And then I don't know if Shiprock does the same thing. Like, as soon as you get on, they make you select which drink package you'd like to participate in. And then highest was like the double diamond package. And we're both like, well, what, were we going to not get that one?
Yeah, we're getting the double diamond. Yeah.
But then you do that, and then you like are financially beholden to fulfill.
Right.
However much money you said you were going to drink that day.
Yeah.
And so we were just juggling, just the end of the day, like just daiquiris, just to hold them, just like, I don't want this at all. This is so gross.
Once again, obligated. And I will say for the record here, as our Shiprock guests are viewing this is another reason why there's no drink packages on Shiprock right there. There you go. See, even Kyle Kinane will tell you that it's not worth the money, everybody, is you're just forced to drink it. So so that's great. You've been on a cruise, so you know a little bit about it. Well, the Disney cruise was a bad example, but had you been on a cruise as an adult, just a regular cruise, we'll call it, just a run of the mill kind of Monday through Friday, you know, with no event, so to speak, on it, I would say my typical line is, okay, then you've never really been on a cruise, because Shiprock is that much different than a regular cruise. It's, you know, the ship transforms and it's just this whole community of people that are just ready to fucking rock, man, you know?
Yeah.
So have you familiarized yourself with any of the artists or the singers, bands that are going to be on board, and do you dig any of them, or what's your musical stylings these days?
I'm not sure the layout, but you know, as a comedian, you get to play festivals, and some of the best parts of that are just walking around going, I'm pretty out of touch. What a great time to learn about everything is at a festival of like, that sounds good over there. Let me check it out. That sounds good over there. Let me check it out. So I know like Lamb of God. I know them. Actually, a buddy of mine who's a pal from Wisconsin, but played in a lot of metal bands, like, do you know any of these guys? Like, oh, these are all these, like, those are nice guys. These are nice guys. These are sweet guys. His whole thing, the whole roster is like, real sweet guys.
Sweet guys. Sweet guys. Lamb of God, sweet guys. Yeah.
Like, that's true.
They really are. Yeah.
The grotesque, like band promo shots. He's like, he's a real sweetheart.
Sweet guys. Yeah.
Guys, great, great fellas.
Yeah.
Let him kiss your baby.
Yeah, the boys of Deicide. Great, great fellas.
Have you gotten Deicide on the boat?
No, we haven't. I was actually emailing back and forth with one of the guys that plays in Deicide just the other day, and it was funny because he was super nice guy. I was like, he's in Deicide. That's funny. But no, that not quite as dark as that. Shiprock definitely leans towards
I don't think Deicide can appear in the sunlight.
No, I don't think they can. They vanish into dust. But no, Shiprock is there's some bands out there that just don't, I'm not going to name them, but we, you know, that we look at booking year after year, and it's just like, they don't really fit the Shiprock is so fun that some bands just don't really, you know, it's like there's got certain energy, and the super negative energy is for some. And I don't think it's really for this kind of vibe when you're talking about a beach and a fuzzy drink. You know what I mean?
I agree with that. I mean, Lamb of God, I know already, and I like. Somebody was saying to check out 68, so I was looking at some of their videos, like just a guitar and drum kind of reel.
So good.
Yeah. Like, speaking of hall show days, that dude's the singer's like a warrior from that period of time. Like,
Really? Still is, really, yeah.
Yeah, really, yeah. So you'll get along with him just in general from that, the saga of life that you go
through. And they knew it. Only two guys. Two guys, they knew how to streamline, strip it down.
That's right. Okay, so we made $1.
I need a bass player. I got a pedal.
Hey, drummer, we made $1 tonight. We don't really have to think too hard about how we split this, do we?
Yeah. We're just gonna whatever, 101 Dalmatians, some ramen together. That's not where the dogs, that's something else.
That's a different thing. It's a different thing.
I didn't learn a lot on that Disney cruise, I'll tell you. I didn't learn my good point.
Yeah, how old were you when you did that one?
I was a child.
Okay, yeah.
I was just a child.
Barely a memory.
Excitable by characters.
Well, we said, you mentioned POD a minute ago before we started recording with a hilarious joke that probably won't make the cutting room. We'll be on the cutting room floor, I guess.
Oh, really?
But the POD guys.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I don't know how many jokes I can make at metalheads.
At them?
Find it funny.
Our guests find themselves, they're lovable. They'll all laugh at themselves. Yeah, good.
I'm going to be a little bit of a roast.
Yeah, maybe.
You're just going to be sitting in a chair and we're going to walk them out one by one and you're just going to say whatever you want.
I've done comedy at punk rock bowling and that's like shooting fish in a sleeveless denim vested barrel.
It's gonna be
a good time.
It is gonna be a good time.
But so no, I really don't know a lot of stuff, and that's why I think it's gonna be fun to just and especially to see it live. You can always hear something like, I kind of like that, but see it, like how a band puts on a live show can really make or break like why I want to be a fan of them.
Sure.
Because then you listen to music and you remember how insane the live show was. You're like, yeah, this isn't capturing it, but I know how great these guys are live.
So. Yeah, for sure. There's always one or two of those, sometimes more in the 12 years we've been doing it, where you walk around and you go, holy shit. And for me, one of the best ones was Chad's band Wilson in 2014 on our cruise. That was just fucking blew everybody's mind. Yeah, really good. He won't be performing with that band on Shiprock this year, but I just wanted to say it.
That's really nice of you.
That was very nice of you.
So, what did you go? Just out of pure curiosity here, beyond our lineup on the ship, when you like put headphones on or get in your car, whatever it is, what is it that is your go to? Even if it's just two or three records that you just like, I'm probably going to put something like this on. Even if it's just nowadays, it doesn't have to be a
book. Yeah, I mean, I wish like my year end wrap ups on all the streaming services just look the same for the past 10 years. Like, it's like, wow, look who listened to Naked Ray Gun a bunch this year, though they haven't. I've been defaulting to so much. I did that same thing like, you see people who were like, oh no, this era of music reminds me of this era of my life. And so by listening to it, I'm just going back to better times as opposed to going like, well, maybe right now is pretty good too. And you could attach some new music to these new memories. And I've been lazy with that, straight up lazy with that. And now I'm just, I don't have kids, but I'm just somebody's dad every time in a car ride. Now who's this? Mm-hmm. Who's this now? No, I have Shazam, but you could just tell me. Like I find new music in the every time I'm in the Levi's store, I don't even care. I'm just Shazam. And where's the speaker? Is the speaker here? I don't even care. Yeah. Like I'm not stealing this jacket. I was trying it on, but I need to know who this is.
Are you shopping, sir? No, I'm not shopping.
Yeah. You know how many times it's been a Bruno Mars song? More than I'm comfortable with.
I'm sure it is.
He's the new prince. I just need to admit that young fella's got quite a future.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
And it's also because it's when I'm like, you know what? This is a fun song that you can kind of dance to. What? Who cares? Let's listen to it.
Well, and that's got a cool jacket on.
Yeah.
I feel good with Chad. The story's giving me confidence. That's how they know. The music goes like, hey, look at what you're wearing.
What you're wearing. Yeah. If it sounds good, it looks good.
Yeah. You could be Bruno Mars.
Listen,
like here. Burlington Coat Factory, like fooled around and fell in love. Like, I just need a sport coat for a funeral. Can you guys help me out? I don't want to be in here longer than I have to be.
But you know, but liking something.
My grandmother just died. I want to look nice. Just let me get out of here.
Oh God, my fucking neck. I don't even remember where we were at.
I just pulled my neck.
We're just riffing, man.
But that says something about you, Kyle, as an older fella or an experienced fella, that you're willing to hear something that's new and go, hey, I like that, rather than going, oh, it's pop bullshit. Just, hey, man, I like what I like, right?
And how often do you see people that just turn into like, well, the era of music that I listened to it was the greatest era that ever was, and therefore anything... Admitting that any generation younger than you can do something of quality is such a dead end. And I don't want to look like a weird youth freak of like the guy that's too old to be at the all ages show without a kid. Like I still have to pretend like, have you seen my son? I still have to like say that occasionally when I'm just like at an all ages show because that's where the band I want to see play.
Yeah. In between songs.
His name's Teddy. He's got the shirt from the band on. He likes him a lot. So I just don't know where to get exposed. I mean, Top 40 radio doesn't do anything for me. XM is kind of like okay with some of the channels. I'm not listening to like, but then I still listen to like the Hair Nation channel or the Punk channel, which for some reason just plays a Sum 41 song every third song. I don't know who's got naked pictures of an exec at Sirius XM that Sum 41 gets that much airtime. No offense to Sum 41
everybody. Sorry.
Now they're going to throw me over the boat.
Yeah. different cruise.
Yeah, different cruise. But I don't want to get caught up in that new stuff is dumb because it's young people things.
Yeah.
It's a trap that so many people fall into.
And well, they forget that their stuff that they listen to, I always say this about SoundCloud rappers and stuff like that. When people get all haywire about this, these kids, it's like, man, it's punk rock. It's the same version of opening up the trunk of your car after the fucking call show as kids pile out and you hand them whatever cassette tape or whatnot it is. That's just their version of giving away their music. And this is them rebelling from the normal lane of traffic until it becomes so large that it's making money and kids think that that's the way they got to do it. Yeah. Right? Same with punk.
Somebody described dubstep. That's the one with the crazy engine noises, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of it, but somebody was like, at least they're trying to make something new, like sonically trying to create a new sound. And I was like, I can't argue with that at all. From like the beginnings of people like cutting the cones in their amps to get distortion, like, oh, they're just trying to take all these elements and make it. You might not like it, but the thing that this inspires might be what you like. So good for people getting out there and trying to craft a new thing, even though my default is to make fun of everything that I don't understand.
But then,
cowardly slink away and then try and reassess why. Oh, it's just because I'm scared of death and therefore new things make me feel closer to the light. And so I need to reassess and be okay and accept young people's efforts with
as I've consumed a lot of your media lately. You have that element though. It's there's a self-deprecation, there's a self-awareness of, listen, you said it on more than once that I heard, I know I'm hypocritical when I say this, but right, it's like picking on people and noticing those things, you know, that's okay because at the end of the day you're not hurting anybody, but you're not really judging anybody. You're making a joke, making a comment, and it's funny. And
recognize the source material. I comedians that are so like, let me tell you how the world works. You don't know how the world works. You're a comedian because you were bad at everything else. Mm. You don't become a comedian because you were a great accountant and decided you needed a challenge. It's like, no, look, I fucked up all these other things, but I can share me fucking up at them with people for laughter. So that's why I'm in this position, not because, oh, no, actually, I've studied sociological progress in Eastern Europe countries from the years 1912 to 1963. So I can comment on what's happening. No, you don't know shit. It's a cool standpoint to be in, but I'm more attracted to comedians and musicians that are like, I don't know, we kind of believe in what we're doing. You don't have to, but we believe in what we're doing. And so here we go, which is why. Anytime I start talking like I know something, I got to back up and realize, you're contradicting something you said this morning, dude. So full disclosure, let people know that you're full of shit right away.
Yeah. And I know we're getting up against our hour long here, and we appreciate you so much for joining us, man. It's been great. We have two quick segments that we like to do as we wrap up, and Chad has another, like a third thing that we've been doing week to week. But before we get to that, I do want to say, there was, speaking of the old man at the concert thing, and you mentioned dubstep. Mm-hmm. I, 9 years ago, I drove 2.5 hours to Knoxville, Tennessee from Nashville, to go to some DJ club to see a dubstep artist named Skrillex. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something, I was 40. And that was super weird. If I had known at the time, I'd have been like, yeah, where's Ricky? I haven't seen. Have you seen my boy?
Yeah.
Right. That thing would have been super handy. But you know, it was interesting. I was the old fart there. I had a couple of drinks. I went by myself. That's how into that sound I was. It just captivated me because I'm a metalhead at heart, and the sounds were super heavy and aggressive. And I found that kid to be really talented and interesting. And it blew my mind. I mean, it actually blew my eardrum. I think I had permanent damages from the vibration. Yeah. But there you go. You know, people step out and take a chance on something that you dig, and if you like it, you like it, right?
Yeah, or like hearing something on a movie soundtrack, which I always thought was forbidden to enjoy a song from a movie soundtrack, but that's why it's on there, so you get excited about that. There's this, I think it's just one guy, but it's called the Mexican Institute of Sound, and I keep describing it's like if Urban Dance Squad and Beastie Boys collaborated, and then it was in Spanish whatever they did.
What?
And I just it's like weird, I'm assuming somewhat political, social messages, but it's in Spanish, but I also want to learn Spanish, so that's helped. But it's also like crazy mixes and samples all over the place, but with like sometimes a mariachi horn element, but like it's all over the place. And I saw them, I did a festival in Tucson where they were playing, and I'm like, I'm dancing against my will to this. Right. I'm by myself and I look like this, and I can't help but enjoy this show live.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
And it was a new sound. It was all these elements mixing together to create a new sound, which is just easier done with electronics than it is with.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It's unlimited. So
bands like the Bronx, I'll say the bands like the Bronx, who also will do Mariachi El Bronx and be like, oh, by the way, and we're not making fun of it. This is a sincere tribute to music of Los Angeles, where we're from.
Right.
Yeah.
And they do a very fucking good job at tributing that style of music.
Yeah. I don't know if it's my place to say if they're doing a good job or not. I'd like to hear somebody from Mariachi. Yeah,
you're probably right. I should have
heritage in that scene. Be like, oh, actually this is not offensive to us. Cause right now it's white guys wearing the little jackets with the embroidery. I'm like,
yeah, shit. Can I like this?
Somebody tell me if this is cool. I don't know.
It sounds good.
So I like it, but I'm not going to say it's honorable to the culture.
That's it might be appropriating, but at the same time, I like it. What would you like? This is called Walk the Plank. So just so you know, I'm just going to go at you with a question that probably has nothing to do with being a comedian or music or anything like that. And then he'll give you one. Mine is, what would you like to find at a yard sale?
I like to find at a yard sale 80s BMX parts and bikes.
Parts and bikes to build one bike?
Yeah, I already have one that I'm trying to revamp and just 80, like any 80s skate. I mean, if we're going garage sale, I'm thinking nostalgic stuff and stuff that I cared about as a kid were like skateboard and bikes were like somebody's son moved out. They didn't know that this original, you know, Caballero deck, I don't know.
Yeah,
$1. Okay.
Great answer.
What remains undone that you'd wanted to get done for years?
Wow, really went from specific.
We are walking the plank, my friend.
Arr.
Like I said, you know, I keep talking about I want to learn Spanish, and I truly. Long story short, I don't know about the future of maybe
Spanish.
English. at least trying to be in America for much longer. Me personally, I'm like, well, I can either learn a skill that can move across borders that doesn't rely on language so much, or I can learn another language to maintain the skill that I still have to move across some borders. So I think I need to stop talking about wanting to learn Spanish and learn some Spanish.
There you go. Yeah, good answer. It's interesting you went that way. It wasn't like so that I can order from the menu at the Mexican restaurant more fluently. It was like, I want to share my love of what I do in a different language to a different group of people. That's cool. Good answer.
Yeah, and also I don't know if you've been to a Mexican restaurant. They know what you're saying.
No hablo, sir.
I go to one Mexican restaurant that refuses to take an order.
Yeah, no. It's pollo. It's pollo. Okay, right. I thought it was polo.
Good for them, man.
Yeah. So the last part of this, for at least for me, is every episode I ask the guest to ask our next guest a question without knowing who that next guest is going to be. I mean, so like they're just asking a question. So this guy, he goes by the name of 0936. He'll be on the ship. His band's called, well, I guess he's a one person band, but we'll have a band there. And we had him on last week, and his question was, I feel pretty great. And that was, who was the best WWF wrestler, but inside of the Attitude Era? And he defined that as, after Rowdy Piper, but you know, where like a Mankind is and the Undertaker and all that.
Okay. I don't know wrestling.
There you go. Both wrong. We were both wrong.
We thought for sure. Well, you said 80s BMX bike, and when you said that, I'm like, ooh, maybe there's a wild card here. Maybe.
But that is what's weird is that there's huge parts of like that. Every kid my age growing up had some sort of shared enthusiasm or fandom of that. I just missed it. And I don't know what I was doing. I was probably off in the woods on a BMX bike being shitty at it. Or, you know, like all the people talk about Saturday Night Live. I was like, if I'm at home on a Saturday night, I'm a fucking loser. So I was always like at all ages shows. So again, 80s BMX bikes or pop punk bands from the Midwest in the mid to late 90s. I can go on about.
Yeah.
But professional wrestling, I feel like.
That's interesting.
Who are some of the wrestlers of that era? I read Mankind's book.
It's a great book.
That was a great like insight to how wrestling was so similar to comedy. Like if the match was like, if the crowd was bad, the wrestlers would kind of just do stuff to entertain each other and make each other laugh. And it's like, oh, it's nice to hear about this, the showmanship of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't say it's fake, but the fact like the athleticism is off the charts. But then they'd still do stuff to make each other laugh if it was a shitty gig. Yeah. Like, I get this lifestyle entirely. Yeah.
It's funny, man. Wrestling for me was that thing too. I had a couple of my buddies who went all the way in, man. And I was playing music, and it was just kind of like that's, and what's funny is that's where our friendship just kind of, you know, at 12, 13, 14, it just whoop, two different directions, you know. So it's interesting. It just kind of either falls in your lap or it doesn't. I have a bonus walk the plank for you. And then we'll bid you adieu.
I gotta ask him his question. Ask him for his question.
Oh yeah, no, go ahead, Chad. I'm sorry. You're right. Go ahead.
Actually it's Kyle. Go ahead, Kyle.
Oh yeah, Kyle, you need to ask a question of our guest next week.
Well, now do I throw them under the bus the way I got handed with this wrestling stuff? Do I say who's your favorite King of Bird champion?
That was a pre Wilkerson question.
Airlines. When Ron Wilkerson still rode for Haro, pre Wilkerson Airlines. I don't know. I think, knowing that sharks follow a cruise ship, would you water ski at speed? Can you water ski off the back of a cruise ship?
With two-parter.
Velocity wise. No, that's true. That's a technical question for the cruise people.
Okay. I believe,
how many knots are we moving?
I should know the answer, but I believe top speed is in the 23 mile an hour range.
Okay.
So you could.
Saying that that's possible. If you're a true like rock and roll badass kind of guy, would you water ski off the back of a cruise ship? Knowing about the shark fact,
knowing this, and I'll grab the verbiage from earlier and use it in your question. But so you would be like knowing that there are schools upon schools of deadly water rabbits out there.
Throw allegedly in there because I'm not.
Okay, allegedly, knowing allegedly, if this fact were to be, this potential fact were to be true, would you do this, the water skiing? Go, love it.
And also, I would like to add an allegedly too, because I'm not sure. I think it's like 22, 23 miles an hour top speed. So given the speed factor alone.
We can finagle the numbers on that just to make this question answerable.
And if you can't in real life, this question is, would you? It doesn't matter if you could or couldn't in real life.
Yeah. I just think you see the big boat doesn't look like it's moving at all. And then you see one guy in the back like, what's up?
I love it.
The
bonus walked the plank this evening. And we'll finish on this low light. Kyle, when I eat pork, my stool is a little bit green. Do you have foods that affect you in a similar way?
That make me shit? Yeah, all of them.
Well, yeah, because otherwise you die.
When I eat food, my stool turns out to be a color because it comes out of my body. I will say, make note of whenever you've eaten beets.
Beets, yes.
Scary. Otherwise, you will scare yourself.
And remember that you ate them and be prepared for the offering.
I'm trying to be as couth as possible here. But just make note the night before. Hey, remember you're eating beets. Don't wake up tomorrow.
Right.
And thank you. Call an ambulance.
Thank you for keeping it G-rated. I did use the word stool because I'm a professional.
Yeah, I did too. Well, see, I work around, I let people get to the conclusion themselves. I shepherd.
I thought you were going to say I work around a lot of stools,
work with a lot of stools.
And there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, once I threw up Four Loko, and I also same thing. Like I gotta get an ambulance. Like, no, you drank Four Loko. That's why it's all.
It's not. You don't need an ambulance. You need vomit and rest.
Yeah, you need some Gatorade.
Yeah, hydration. Kyle, once again, thank you so much for being with us, man. I had a great time, and I know Chad has got his more than significant erection the entire night. Just being here with you.
God.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah.
Facebook Live, guys. So Zuck is going to shut it down.
I know. We're going to get shut down, Zuck. Yeah. So thank you for being with us. We really look forward to seeing you on the ship. And for our guests watching now, from what I understand earlier in the conversation before we went on air, Kyle is working up a fairly customized set for us on the ship. So it's going to be pretty tailored to our needs, and certainly put your big boy pants and your big girl pants on, because you may be the center of those jokes, which is going to be great. You can check out this podcast Monday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern time, and YouTube and anywhere you get your podcasts. And we've been Making Waves episode 70 with Kyle Kinane. Thank you so much for being here, man. We can't thank you enough. It's been a blast. Thank you.
You betcha. See you guys in a couple weeks.
Yeah, sounds good. Let us know if you have any questions at all, man. I'll take care of you.
For sure.
Okay, thanks, buddy.
Bye, Kyle.
See you guys. Thanks, Chatty.
Bye-bye.
You know, you try to be the best person. I was traveling with the missus over the holidays. I kind of took a few months off of comedy, and I was out with the missus. We went to Europe, and I love traveling. I think that's a great way to crack your mind open, see some other cultures. I'm not good at it. In the sense, like, not that I'm like I can get on a plane and sit there, but I'm not a good representative of America when I travel, because I still, as much as I want to think I'm cultured, I get to some place and then I always fuck something up. Like, so we went to Spain, and like Spain's amazing with a Gothic quarter and this architecture. And I watched a woman, she's walking her dog, and her dog did something, and she started to yell at her dog in Spanish. And my first thought was, dogs don't know Spanish. Like, come on, lady, look at your dog. Dogs know English. That's what dogs speak. Dogs speak English, you dumb Spanish lady. Come on. You got a cat? All right, cat might be a little more continental. I can see a cat swiping through some Duolingo lessons, being curious about them. Cats are curious, and they might want to learn another language. Dog, let me look at the dog.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.